Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Let's do it again. It's time to learn and improve your American English skills with the Voice of America. We come to you with a new program every day from Washington. We talk about interesting and important things that are happening around the world. Today, we have two stories for you. The first one is about human rights in China. Then we will keep our attention focused on Asia as we hear about North Korea and its possible plans to test long-range missiles from a newly enlarged launch pad. After you listen to the program, we suggest that you download the podcast and save it so you can listen to it more than once and continue practicing speaking English the American way. Okay, let's get started with part one. China has detained and questioned more than 100 human rights lawyers and activists recently. Rights groups are sharply critical of the Chinese government. They are describing its actions as the worst crackdown in 20 years. The China Human Rights Lawyers Concern Group reported that 114 human rights lawyers and activists from 18 provinces were called in for questioning. At least 22 are said to remain in police detention. The Hong Kong-based group said those affected include some of China's most famous human rights lawyers. On the morning of July 9th, lawyer Wang Yu was taken from her home by police. Her whereabouts remain unknown. Ms. Yu was China's first female human rights lawyer. She won international recognition in recent years for defending economist Ilham Tohti, a Uyghur. He is now serving a life sentence on separatism charges. Wang Yu also defended rights activist Cao Chengli, who died in police detention. Not long after Ms. Wang's detention, more than 100 lawyers across China signed an open letter protesting her disappearance. The China Human Rights Lawyers Concern Group reported the existence of the letter. Officials later detained some of those who signed their names to the list, as well as two members of the Beijing Feng Gui law firm, Zhou Shifeng and Liu Xiaoyuan. Their office recently came under attack by Chinese state media. The Xinhua News Agency reported that the firm had taken on more than 40 sensitive cases since July 2012. Xinhua said the cases seriously disturbed the social order. One of those questioned was Ge Yongxi, a lawyer from Guangdong. He has defended Christian clergymen and anti-corruption activists. He was released Saturday night after hours of questioning. Ge Yongxi later said he was questioned because of his support for Wang Yu. He said, "I don't believe this crackdown will cool down people's attention to Wang Yu's and Zhou Shifeng's cases. The reason we voiced our support behind Wang was to promote the rule of law by public security officers, who haven't fully abided by the laws in many ways." Hong Kong lawyer Albert Ho said the Chinese government's actions are aimed at trying to silence the legal community. "We are very concerned about the situation, and this is the most massive crackdown we've seen in this period," he said. Lawyer Mo Xiaoping defended China's detained Nobel Peace Prize winner Liu Xiaobo. He called the crackdown ridiculous because many of the lawyers are working on cases in which China's public security officers are accused of wrongdoing. The arrest of the lawyers is unjust, he said. Lawyer Guh said the officials' actions call into question President Xi Jinping's efforts to support the rule of law. Mr. Guh urged U.S. President Barack Obama to press Mr. Xi on human rights in China when they meet in September. Earlier this year, China released a new national security law. Observers say the law gives police the ability to suppress human rights because national security is defined in a very broad way. On Monday, the U.S. State Department expressed concern over the detentions. A statement said, "We strongly urge China to respect the rights of all of its citizens and to release all those who have recently been detained for seeking to protect the rights of Chinese citizens." You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. The Yonhap News Agency says North Korea has set up a launch pad equipped to fire long-range ballistic missiles larger than those used in earlier tests. Yonhap said the launch pad is close to North Korea's border with China. The structure was said to be 50 meters tall, but it reportedly has been extended to a height of 67 meters. The launch pad is now said to have the ability to launch a rocket double the size of the 30-meter-tall Unha 3 rocket. North Korea used an Unha 3 rocket to send a satellite into space in December 2012. However, United States officials said the satellite went out of control while in Earth orbit. Observers said the launch pad appeared to be a step toward development of an intercontinental range missile, one designed to hit a distant target. Yonhap said a government official in Seoul provided the information used in its report. The South Korea news agency said the launch pad could be used to fire a long-range missile sometime around October 10th. That is the day when North Korea will mark the 70th anniversary of its Communist Party. Earlier this week, North Korea said it has no interest in negotiations that would result in the government giving up its nuclear program. A foreign ministry statement said it was illogical to compare Iran's nuclear deal with world powers to the situation in North Korea. The statement went on to say North Korea is always subjected to provocative U.S. military hostilities, including massive joint military exercises and a grave nuclear threat. The Iranian nuclear agreement will limit the country's nuclear activities in exchange for an end to economic restrictions on Iran. After the agreement was announced, U.S. Undersecretary of State Wendy Sherman called on North Korea to learn from the deal. "The one thing I will say, and I would say to the North Koreans, is that this agreement demonstrates that one can come out of isolation and do so in a peaceful way," she said. "It perhaps might give North Korea second thoughts about the very dangerous path that it is currently pursuing." North Korea said on Tuesday that it has no interest in any communications to discuss suspending or disarming its nuclear program. The North instead said that it is a nuclear weapons state. You are listening to As It Is, a program from the Learning English Department of the Voice of America. The Making of a Nation, an American History lesson, follows in about 5 minutes.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. People have long known that nuts are a part of a healthy diet. However, scientists in the Netherlands recently found that you do not need to eat many to get all the health benefits. The researchers found that eating a handful of nuts or peanuts every day is linked to a lower risk of death from several major diseases. Pete Vandenbrandt, a professor of epidemiology at Maastricht University, led the research. He says that eating nuts protects the health of both men and women.
Nut intake seemed to be protective for both men and women, and that was on total mortality, so any cause of death.
Professor Vandenbrandt adds that you do not need as many nuts as health experts earlier suggested.
What we found is that the beneficial effect of nuts and peanuts is already apparent at a lot lower levels of intake than has been suggested before.
About 10 grams a day is enough to get the full health benefits of nuts. That is about an average-sized handful. Nuts are high in fat and calories, so eating a handful before dinner can help you to eat less. But eating too many can ruin your appetite altogether. However, the researchers found that many peanut butters did not give the same health benefits as plain peanuts. That is because most peanut butters contain added oils and sugars. Also, when choosing nuts to eat, avoid those stored or roasted in oil. Dry roasted is better, but still the high temperatures can kill the healthy nutrients. Nuts are most healthy if you eat them raw. Not all nuts are created equal. Nuts differ in their fat and nutrient content. Almonds are among the least fatty nuts. Almonds also have calcium and are high in vitamin E. Vitamin E helps to protect the body from disease, and it's good for skin and eyes. Chestnuts are the nut with the least fat and fewest calories. Chestnuts are rich in carbohydrates and fiber, and in their raw form, chestnuts are a good source of vitamin C. Roasted chestnuts are a popular treat in the winter. If you do not eat meat, cashews are a good substitute. Cashews have lots of protein and minerals like iron and zinc. They also have the mineral magnesium, which may help to improve memory. Walnuts are loaded with antioxidants, compounds that may help protect against cancer. They are also loaded with heart-friendly fats and omega-3s. So, walnuts are a good choice for people who do not eat fish. Pecans are good if you want to feel less tired, and pistachios can help balance your hormone levels. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Last week in our series, we talked about the voyages to the New World by Christopher Columbus and other explorers sailing for Spain and Portugal. Today we tell the story of the first permanent English settlements in North America. England was the first country to compete with Spain for claims in the New World. Queen Elizabeth I supported explorations as early as the 1570s. Sir Humphrey Gilbert led the first English settlement efforts, but he did not establish any lasting settlement. He died as he was returning to England. Gilbert's half-brother, Sir Walter Raleigh, continued his work. Raleigh sent a number of ships to explore the east coast of North America. He named an area of the coast Virginia in honor of Queen Elizabeth, who never married and was known as the Virgin Queen. In 1585, about 100 men settled on Roanoke Island off the coast of the present-day state of North Carolina. These settlers returned to England a year later. Another group went to Roanoke the next year. This group included a number of women and children. But the supply ships that Raleigh sent to the colony failed to arrive. When help got there in 1590, none of the settlers could be found. At least some of the settlers may have become part of the Indian tribe that lived in the area. One reason for the delay in getting supplies to Roanoke was the attack of the Spanish Navy against England in 1588. King Philip of Spain had decided to invade England, but the small English ships, combined with a fierce storm, defeated the huge Spanish fleet. As a result, Spain was no longer able to block English exploration. England discovered that supporting colonies so far away cost a lot of money. So Queen Elizabeth took no more action to do it. Not until after her death in 1603 did England begin serious efforts to start colonies in America. In 1606, the new English king, James I, gave two business groups permission to establish colonies in Virginia, the area claimed by England. Companies were organized to carry out the move. The London Company sent 100 settlers to Virginia in 1606. The group landed there in May 1607 and founded Jamestown. It was the first permanent English colony in the New World. The colony seemed about to fail from the start. The settlers did not plant their crops in time, so they soon had no food. Their leaders lacked the farming and building skills needed to survive on the land. More than half the settlers died during the first winter. The businessmen controlling the colony from London knew nothing about living in such a wild place. They wanted the settlers to search for gold and explore local rivers in hopes of finding a way to the east. One settler knew this was wrong. His name was Captain John Smith. He helped the colonists build houses and grow food by learning from the local Indians. Still, the Jamestown settlers continued to die each year from disease, starvation, and Indian attacks. The London Company sent 6,000 settlers to Virginia between 1606 and 1622. More than 4,000 died during that time. Historians say that all the settlers surely would have died without the help of the local Powhatan Indians. The Indians gave the settlers food. They taught them how to live in the forest. And the Powhatan Indians showed the settlers how to plant new crops and how to clear the land for building. The settlers accepted the Indians' help. Then, however, the settlers took whatever else they wanted by force. In 1622, the local Indians attacked the settlers for interfering with Indian land. 340 settlers died. The colonists answered the attack by destroying the native tribes living along Virginia's coast. The settlers recognized that they would have to grow their own food and survive on their own without help from England or anyone else. The Jamestown colony was clearly established by 1624. It was even beginning to earn money by growing and selling a new crop, tobacco. The other early English settlements in North America were much to the north, in what is today the state of Massachusetts. The people who settled there left England for reasons different than those who settled in Jamestown. The Virginia settlers were looking for ways to earn money for English businesses. The settlers in Massachusetts were seeking religious freedom. King Henry VIII of England had separated from the Roman Catholic Church. His daughter, Queen Elizabeth, established the Protestant faith in England. It was called the Church of England or the Anglican Church. The Anglican Church, however, was similar to the Roman Catholic Church. Not all Protestants liked this idea. Some wanted to leave the Anglican Church and form religious groups of their own. In 1606, members of one group in the town of Scrooby did separate from the Anglican Church. About 125 people left England for Holland. They found problems there too, so they decided to move again to the New World. These people were called pilgrims. Pilgrims are people who travel for religious reasons. About 35 pilgrims were among the 102 passengers and crew on a ship called the Mayflower in 1620. The Mayflower set sail from England, headed for Virginia, but the ship never reached Virginia. It was blown far off its planned course. Instead, it reached land far to the north on Cape Cod Bay. The group decided to stay there instead of trying to find Jamestown far to the south in Virginia. They settled what would become the Massachusetts Bay Colony. They called the colony Plymouth, naming it after the harbor in England from which they departed on their voyage to the New World. The pilgrims and the others aboard the Mayflower believed they were not under English control since they did not land in Virginia. They saw the need for rules that would help them live together peacefully. They wrote a plan of government, which they called the Mayflower Compact. It was the first such plan ever developed in the New World. They elected William Bradford as the first governor of the Plymouth Colony. We know about the first 30 years of the colony, as William Bradford described it in his book of Plymouth Plantation. It is also sometimes referred to as William Bradford's Journal. It actually tells the story of the Pilgrims from 1608, when they settled in the Netherlands through the Mayflower voyage until the year 1647. It ends with a list, written in 1650, of Mayflower passengers and what happened to them. As happened in Jamestown, about half the settlers in Plymouth died during the first winter. The survivors were surprised to find an Indian who spoke English. His name was Squanto. He had been kidnapped by an English sea captain and had lived in England before returning to his people. The Pilgrims believed God had sent them Squanto. He made it possible for them to communicate with the native people. He showed them the best places to fish, what kind of crops to plant, and how to grow them. He provided them with all kinds of information they needed to survive. The settlers invited the Indians to a feast in the month of November to celebrate their successes and to thank Squanto for his help. Americans remember this feast when they celebrate the holiday of Thanksgiving Day in November. Other English settlers began arriving in the area now called New England. One large group was the Puritans. Like the Pilgrims, the Puritans disagreed with the Anglican Church, but they did not want to leave the Church. The Puritans wanted to change it, to make it more holy in their view. Their desire for this change made them unwelcome in England. The first ship carrying Puritans left England for America in 1630. By the end of that summer, 1,000 Puritans had landed in the Northeast. Charles, the new English king, had given permission for them to settle in the Massachusetts Bay area. The Puritans began leaving England in large groups. Between 1630 and 1640, 20,000 sailed for New England. They risked their lives on the dangerous trip. They wanted to live among people who believed as they did. The Puritans and other Europeans, however, found a very different people already living in the New World. They were the Native Americans, or Indians, as Columbus called them, after thinking he had reached the East. That will be our story next week. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.